Mini episode 1875 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1875. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Steve Callis, one of our favorite lounge dignitaries, Steve Callis, from the Great Callis Remarks podcast. And we are here to break down the 2025 World Series. And as I indicated to Steve off air here, I have a couple of little nuggets that I always kind of get us started with on this as far as looking at this. There's kind of a substantive type one that I'll hold for a second here in favor of some of the sillier ones. And those would be, of course, you go to this, that the Yankees, of course, it has been said, were the last team to defend their world title in 1999 into 2000. So you have to like the odds of the Dodgers. The Indiana Pacers have already shown that this is the year of repeating 2025 years later as they make it to the NBA Finals again. We can pencil in the Pacers for 2050 and nothing in between at this point, certainly. Sorry, Halliburton. And I indicated to you off air one notable piece of sports history between Los Angeles and Toronto. Ironically, Toronto spoken of in Canadian circles as being sort of the Los Angeles of Canada, also sort of the New York of Canada. No offense to what some have referred to as the 51st state, but they're kind of lacking for super notable cities here. Have you noticed the trend? It's all sort of Toronto. Everything is sort of packed into Toronto up there. But one piece of sports history significant between Los Angeles and Toronto over the decades. Does anything pop into your head, Steve?
Something pops into my head, but I'm not sure I have it on the back end, but I am guessing now. I know the Raptors won the championship, and I'm now hoping that they beat the Lakers.
They did not. That was the Golden State Warriors, albeit they beat a team from California. So right. You were kind of there, kind of.
In
1993, we saw, this was the closest, I believe, post-Oilers that Gretzky would ever get to the Stanley Cup final. It was, of course, Los Angeles and Toronto going at it there. And it ended up being, of course, Los Angeles. Or I'm sorry, Gretz did make it to there. He was in the I was momentarily confused. He did make it to the Stanley Cup final because it was Montreal and Los Angeles. And, of course, that's the last time that Canada hoisted the Stanley Cup.
Well, but Montreal was not Toronto.
Yeah, had Toronto won the Western Conference Final against Los Angeles, they would have been playing Montreal. It could have been Toronto that would have been the last team to have won the Stanley Cup from Canada, but they couldn't make it past the LA Kings. Well, so the Blue Jays will be looking to avenge the 93 Maple Leafs.
I was dumb enough to pick Toronto a couple times in the last few years. And, of course, they haven't won the Stanley Cup since 1967. So maybe I should have got that one. That was a bit of a stretch, but whatever. I'll take at least the Raptors won the championship. On the part of it was, of course, the four bouncer against our buddies, you know, Philadelphia 76ers.
That's right.
Kind of ended the process, I think, but whatever. But okay, I'll go with that one.
Yeah.
Gretzky in LA. That was a big deal. You're right.
That was a tough one there in what was a couple of pretty good years for Toronto, because of course 92 and 93 were the years that the Blue Jays won the World Series. The mm-hmm. Leafs couldn't replicate the feat with the Stanley Cup in 93. And of course you had the Dodgers winning the World Series in 1988. So this marks the first time that two teams have met in the World Series where They won the World Series 4 years apart and are playing 33 years later in the World Series. Or at least that's probably the case. I didn't look it up, Steve, but we can common sense will tell us that that's probably true. But the one piece of evidence for this series I came across that is more substantive, but I find it hard to believe it's going to apply to this series. I came across this on MLB.com. What would you think the record is since 1985 when the LCS went to seven game, best of seven? What would you think the record is for teams who swept the LCS when they're playing a team that got stretched to seven games in the other league?
I'm going to guess around 500, but I don't know.
You'd think so. 0-4. Teams who swept are 0-4 against teams that got stretched to seven games. Really? Talk about counterintuitive. Wow. So, yeah. That was credit to MLB.com for that one there. And that's a thing where, again, I find it hard to believe that it's going to apply to this series because just to give kind of, you know, spoiler alert, my sort of 50,000-foot view of this thing here, I think it would be at this point a pretty historic upset if the Blue Jays were able to win this series. I mean, along the lines of I've been trying to think of what are some of the biggest upsets of my lifetime or ones that I can remember anyways, probably 1988, 1990, 2003. These are the ones that come to mind. But the Dodgers, the way that they looked in the National League Championship Series, and again, you saw it a year ago, this was not the pitching staff that they had looked to assemble. Now, again, they didn't have all the pieces, you know, subsequently adding, you know, Glasnow to it and everything. But getting all these guys healthy and at their best in there, such a murderer's row. I think the Brewers, I think, hitting 118 over a four-game series. And that was the thing where you've heard the term gentleman's sweep of where it's a five-game series, but it felt more like a sweep. This was like a gentleman's blowout because every game except for like one of them was like really close, but it was like, 2-1 in the fifth inning. The Brewers are cooked, you know, 1-0 in the fifth inning. The Brewers are done. Like, they couldn't come back from anything, and every game felt anticlimactic as soon as the Dodgers got a lead.
Well, I totally agree with that. I on the 0-4 that you just gave me, I wonder, because we talk about this every year now, the Dodgers have had forever off to rest, and this ain't football. And so we always talk about if it's a couple of days, but this has been a long time now that they're not going to play. It was kind of funny. Johnny Callis was on the show this morning with Joe and myself, and he said, I can't believe that they'd be dumb enough to play Game 7 in baseball in the year 2025 on a Monday night when they could have just scheduled it for Tuesday night, and the World Series is starting on Friday anyway. That doesn't affect the Dodgers, but I think he was right in terms of just generally saving baseball. The guys who are supposed to save baseball just don't have, in my opinion, the intelligence to really do anything other than kind of hurt it. But getting back to your point, my belief is on the 0-4, I don't know those exact dates, but on the 0-4, these guys probably had a long layoff. And it's what Earl Weaver said, this ain't football, we play this every day. So when you get not 1 day or 2 days off, but if you get 5 days or 6 days off, that's a problem other than, of course, your pitching is all lined up the way you want it. And I think you're right about the Dodgers. The starters they trotted out are so good that they can have one or two good starters in the bullpen. Their bullpen, as you know, has been terrible all year. And I saw their stats, which maybe I'll read to you in 30 seconds or so. I saw their stats during this postseason. It's still bad. Although in these four games, I mean, let's face it, the Brewers scored one run in every game. The four starters gave up two runs and nine hits. Snell went eight innings, pitched a one-hitter. Yamamoto pitched a complete game, three hits, one run. Glasnow started 5 2/3 innings, three hits, one run. And Ohtani, of course, you know, we can argue about the greatest game ever or not if you want to, but Ohtani, six shutout innings, two earned runs and nine hits in four starts in a pennant-winning series is unbelievable. That sounds like it should be like 1909 stuff or something. And also 34 strikeouts and seven walks. So the good thing for the Dodgers, at least on these stats, is that when they had the guys come in, and again, you had one guy pitch a complete game, Yamamoto, you would have thought it was 1968 or something. And Snell, who's come back to being the real Blake Snell. I don't know if you saw the one playoff game. He's 3-0. I don't know if you saw the one game where with two outs in the fifth inning, Roberts came out to take him out of the game. And they had a close-up of him coming out, and Snell was going like this. And I said to Johnny, this is Kevin Cash, except he's telling Kevin Cash to get the hell back in the dugout. And he got out of that inning, and he got a couple of outs in the next inning. But it was – and I was just waiting for – and I did complain about this on the podcast. I was waiting for somebody at ESPN saying, oh, no, no, this is Kevin Cash in the World Series in Game 6 when he took Blake Snell out over Blake Snell's objection, and three batters later, they were losing. And that was Game 6 of the World Series.
Yeah.
So, but Snell is back. He was only 5-4, but with a 2.35 ERA during the regular season. And he's lights out. He's fresh. He's unbelievable now.
Yeah.
I mean, he was unbelievable in the first game. And frankly, to me, that always kind of sets the tone. You know, the Brewers scored a run, not off of Blake Snell. They scored a run in the ninth inning. And to put a guy like that and then have Yamamoto throw a complete game, you got to be going home saying, what are we going to do? The Brewers were hailed correctly as the team that plays the game the right way. They'll hit and run. They're not big super home run hitters, but they know how to play the game and they take advantage and blah, blah, blah. And it was what you said. It was an absolute blowout, which is interesting because, again, the Dodgers were the big favorites before the year started. I picked them even though I don't like them. And then when we got before the playoffs, they were playing well, but they were still not the best team in their league or the best team in baseball. And then they just put the pedal to the metal. And, Ohtani with the I kind of think it was the greatest performance in a baseball game ever.
Yeah. But
thankfully for my son, he was listening to you'll know who this is. Why can't I remember his name? Patrick. From ESPN years ago with Keith.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Dan Patrick.
Yeah.
Apparently he has his own podcast or something. And he came up with these two games. I don't know if it was – I think it was Bob Gibson threw like a complete game shutout and hit a home run in the World Series game or something. And then he said – because Johnny is great, and he's a great historian, but he wouldn't know this. You will. He said, also, I read in the regular season, or I heard from the ESPN, or the former ESPN guy, that Rick Wise of the Philadelphia Phillies, a good pitcher,
yeah,
that during the regular season once, Rick, he pitched a no-hitter and hit two home runs.
Yeah.
So a lot of old-timers are on Ohtani. Ohtani hasn't pitched more than six innings all year.
Right.
Nor did you expect him to stay in. But, 10 strikeouts in six innings. I would go back to looking at Babe Ruth's stats all my life. He obviously didn't play play many games or bat much in the World Series for the Red Sox, where he was 3-0. When you look at his numbers, he's a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 95-35 with a 2.whatever ERA. 20, he had the record 29 consecutive scoreless innings in the World Series, and then he became Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
So he never really had that chance that Ohtani has had here. I don't take nothing away from Ohtani. I'd like to see him do it in the World Series. You know why? Because there's only one guy in the history of the World Series who hit three home runs twice in a World Series game. And, of course, that's Babe Ruth.
That's right. And when you look at the stage that this was done on, because, yeah, I've seen the Rick Wise stuff too, but, like, this wasn't like one game out of 162 in the middle of the season.
Exactly.
This was on the second biggest stage that there is in baseball. So, and the biggest game of the second biggest stage, the one that puts you in the World Series, and just standing out like that and having a signature game of that sort is just something that is so electric that you just, you look at it and like, this is the full realization for the Dodgers of what this pitching staff was when they went to try to assemble this kind of murderer's row. This is what this is. They're at full strength right now. And that's the whole thing too. You might think that the bats could be a little bit cold going into this series, but the calling card for them in the postseason has been the pitching staff above all else, because again, even Ohtani, I think he started with a very good game against the Reds, had the game in the NLCS clincher and not as much in between. But when the pitching keeps going like that, this is one of these things where, again, you know, you look at it that, as you said, putting guys in the bullpen here, we should touch on the fact that, again, very possibly the 1-2 punch of the greatest pitchers of the 21st century. People will argue this, but very possibly it's Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer. They're both going to be in this series, and we're not going to be talking about them a whole heck of a lot because Kershaw's going to be in the bullpen. He's going to get his curtain call probably in whatever the last game of the series is. Scherzer's going to be somebody, and we'll talk about the Blue Jays. He's somebody that they're going to be leaning on, and this is a thing where, again, when I look at the Blue Jays, and it's not merely, again, having Jimenez and Clement and all these guys that used to play on the Tribe, but it's a thing where watching my outmatched Tribe the last couple of years in October and thinking that there's no margin for error in any of these games, that's what this is going to be like. And they're going to throw Scherzer out there like, please let him be the Max Scherzer of old for at least one game, at least, as opposed to the old Max Scherzer. I mean, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be wishing and a hoping. Clayton Kershaw is going to be in the L.A. bullpen, break glass in case of emergency. He'll come in and perform for them probably pretty well under the circumstances. And again, yeah, you just look at it and like, I just, when I look particularly at the pitching staff and I hear the quote from Dave Roberts, this cocky quote after the NLCS, well, let's go out there and ruin baseball. I'm getting vibes of the Stack the Deck 2017 Warriors. Like, it just, you always think in sports, you can't buy a championship. You can, but it's damn near impossible. And we can almost name off the top of our heads the times it's happened. I will refute until the day I die that the 2002 Detroit Red Wings did that. That was a team, damn it. That was guys who bled for one another. There are some people that will say the 0-2 Red Wings stand as an example of that. Not me. But the 2017 and 2018 Golden State Warriors stand as an example. That could very well have been 2019 as well, had it not been for the injuries to Durant and Klay Thompson in the NBA Finals. But these are the vibes I'm getting from this Dodgers team here. And we are looking at it the last couple of years. And I remember, I think, especially coming out of 2023, and now we see 2023 as the outlier that it was with the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. It was like, October is so random. You get to October and anything can happen. No, not once the deck has been sufficiently stacked. We saw it last year. I predicted in this space that the Dodgers would make short work of the Yankees in the World Series. They did so in part because, again, we'll get to this as well, the gap between the National League and the American League at this point. The Dodgers have already beaten the Phillies, arguably the second-best team in baseball. They've already beaten the Brewers, who are the number one seed in the National League. So you look at this right now, and it's just, it's monumental. And again, for me to have flinched, I picked the Dodgers to win the World Series coming into the season. I said Dodgers over Red Sox. I flinched when the playoffs came. And I was a believer that Seattle would win, but that Seattle would beat Milwaukee. Again, in retrospect, I must have been out of my mind to think Milwaukee stood a chance, because this is the Stack the Deck Warriors all over again. At least my Cleveland Cavaliers aren't on the receiving end of it this time, Steve Callis.
Well, two things on that. And this is just proof of everything we know, which is the Brewers beat the Dodgers all six games they played during the regular season. So what do they say? Throw them out the window, right?
Exactly.
I will minorly disagree with you on one point. I don't think you're going to see Clayton Kershaw, because Clayton Kershaw's record in the postseason is terrible. He's 14-14 with a 4-point-something ERA, and he's lucky to be a 500 pitcher in the postseason. I like Scott Van Pelt a lot, but one day when Kershaw was retiring, although he pitched again afterwards, you know, during the regular season, this was his last appearance, he said, oh, you can't really criticize him for that. And he put up Greg Maddux's numbers, and Maddux's numbers are not good either. His ERA was like one full run lower. I don't know why you have to try and stand up for Clayton Kershaw. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but Joe Stasek and I call him the Peyton Manning of baseball, because Peyton Manning, I mean, that second Super Bowl, come on, he couldn't even really catch his brother, and they dragged him across the finish line to get a second Super Bowl.
I always say he won his second Super Bowl as Trent Dilfer.
Yes. So my point is, Peyton Manning, I mean, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but if we talk about the regular season, he might be the greatest. Clayton Kershaw, he's one of the greatest regular season stars of all time. But please don't put them in there in the top three or five of all time, because you got to, the playoffs have to count for not just something, but a lot. And to me, sure, it's a lot more. What have you done? Now, you could look at guys, Ted Williams played in one World Series, hit 240, maybe had an injured elbow. People say Mickey Mantle, 18 home runs in the World Series, 257 average. You know, even Babe Ruth, 327 average in the World Series. But all these guys were only in the World Series. So to me, we can talk about how great Ohtani was, and as you put it nicely, the second highest level. But I want to see him do it at the highest level, because he was also hitting like 150 before that game. I'm not knocking that. What he did is unheard of. And I think I would argue is the greatest game ever. I don't know about Rick Wise in the regular season or Bob Gibson with one home run, but what he did. But again, when we look at it on the broad scope of Major League Baseball, he pitched six innings.
Yeah.
And once upon a time, if you came out after six, what was it? It was something wrong with you, or you had gotten slaughtered.
Sure.
So it's a different game now. What Ohtani's doing is unbelievable. I will say this finally, because I'm a Babe Ruth guy, as you know. Babe Ruth was a Hall of Fame pitcher before he ever became a Yankee. I mean, his numbers, nobody even knows this. His numbers as a pitcher are just unbelievable. And he had that 29-inning record forever. Maybe Whitey Ford broke it. I think maybe Oral Hershiser later in the 80s. But what he was the best left-hander in baseball. And he won two or three World Series with Boston.
Right.
And then he became Babe Ruth, where he hit home runs and more. So what I said to my son today is, so is Ohtani a Hall of Fame pitcher yet? I don't think you can say so. Is Ohtani a Hall of Fame player who's going to be a DH maybe the rest of his career? I don't know. But you can't tell me he's Babe Ruth on the overall big picture of things in the history. They might be 1-2 when Ohtani retires, but to me it's still going to be 1 Babe Ruth, 2 Ohtani, if he gets that high.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, that's a heck of a, you know, point of comparison anyways. Like, that guy's not as good as Babe Ruth. You know, I mean, that's a heck of a thing to say about somebody, right? But it's the thing with Kershaw, where I will slightly disagree with you, is that Kershaw, it basically, so he's a very good pitcher at this point. He's no longer even at all-star caliber. I mean, basically, you know, Yamamoto being the ace right now, that's sort of where Kershaw was before. Maybe even beyond, as great as Yamamoto is right now, Kershaw was even beyond him at that point. But you're going to be looking at microdose Kershaw in the playoffs here. So he's a very good pitcher, going to be coming in for an inning or two innings or whatever. I think part of what got him in the postseason in the past, he'll never cop to this. Nobody will ever cop to this, but I think it's the fatigue of the innings. And I'm not making an excuse for the man. I'm giving an analysis of what to expect. And that a relatively fresh Clayton Kershaw coming in for spot work in the playoffs here, I think, even though, you know, he ain't as great as he once was, as the country song goes, but I think he'll be better in this World Series in the limited micro doses than he was in the past. That's my sense.
Well, I'll be very, very, very surprised, almost shocked, if he comes in a big spot. Now, they brought him in, I think in the first round, they brought him in a game that was over, and he got smacked around. And he only pitched like an inning and a third or something. So I'll leave it at this.
Okay.
If he comes in a big spot in the World Series, I'll be shocked.
Okay. And I would kind of tend to agree with you on that one there. And the Dodgers, and I'm about to pivot here to Toronto, but I mean, you talk about like as if they need it when you go up and down this lineup here. You know, you've even got a guy who year in and year out, he's not just the one-year guy like back in the day. Kiki Hernandez is the Brian Doyle of 78 every year. Like every year this guy becomes Brian Doyle as soon as the leaves start to fall. So it's like if they needed it. I mean, Max Muncy's kind of turned back the clock a little bit here. So, you know,
don't forget the experience factor.
Yeah.
I mean, Freddie Freeman was the MVP of the World Series last year. They have how many guys back? 10 guys? 15 guys?
Yeah.
I don't know how many, but they have a big advantage over Toronto.
Freeman and Betts among the best players of their generation. And it's a thing where, again, for as much as I loathe the Dodgers, and I have come to do so over a period of time, I don't even like hate the individual players. It's a weird thing. It's like when I see the Yankees or the Red Sox, like I have no problem like waving my fist at them or whatever, but it's like the Dodger players, like I got nothing against them by and large. It's just the organization that I don't like, certainly the fan base among other things, but in the case of Toronto, again, I was like a lot of people that were rooting for what I would consider to be the feel-good story of the Mariners, and we're looking forward to seeing that. I wouldn't have given the Mariners much more of a shot either, but it is a thing where both Seattle and Toronto, it is a thing in terms of bullpen depth where they're both kind of like lacking. They're fine in the ninth inning, but this whole thing of like, well, we'll just get the Dodgers into a bullpen game at the end. You don't really have an edge over them if it comes to that either. I mean, it's 50-50, I guess, is better than taking your chances against Yamamoto or Ohtani or any of those guys. But I mean, it's not a silver bullet getting it into the late innings on them. But they're going to be looking at, again, obviously having to get the best versions they can. And by the way, the best versions of these guys are very, very, very outstanding. I mean, if you get the best Kevin Gausman in the World Series here, if you get a Max Scherzer that can turn back the clock, if you get a Shane Bieber before his arm started to fall off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you've got guys where, you know, there is that capability here. And in terms of, you know, Trey Savage coming in there and doing what he's done in the postseason, that's another thing that kind of takes me back to the Tribe. The whole thing of like, because there were people that were like, why would they play Chase DeLauder when he'd never played a major league game prior to that? Now, he was a guy, again, very, very prized prospect, often injured, but very prized prospect. And I'm like, because their lineup sucks. The guy in his first major league game, he's going to be like the third or fourth best hitter in this lineup. Like, that's why. So it's like with your Savage, like, it's not a rotation that sucks as much, but going up against a team like the Dodgers, like, the fact that the guy doesn't have experience, the flip side of it is they haven't really seen him either. That's going to put them at a little bit of a disadvantage. And the whole thing of like, well, you're just gambling on his youth and his, you know, ability, his raw ability. Well, what else do you have if you're Toronto? I mean, you need everything to break your way to have any chance of, I'd even say, making this a long series at this point. So, again, if lightning strikes in enough of these ways, and I think it starts with the starting pitching, if you get the best possible version out of each of these guys, then maybe you have a 50-50 chance, maybe. But that's kind of how daunting it is to me.
Well, I think you're right, but it's almost like, you know, it's the NFC championship game when a team wins by 25 points, and then somehow that's going to make them the Super Bowl favorites, even though before that you wouldn't really think they'd be the Super Bowl favorites. But yeah, with the Dodgers, who were up here at the beginning of the year but weren't the Dodgers during the year, you're like, how are these guys not winning 105 games? Not 110, yeah, not 116, but 100, and you're sitting there going, what the heck happened to them? But I'll say it again. It looks like Blake Snell is Blake Snell. He's had ups and downs in his career where you're going, I thought he didn't recover from, and I'm not kidding now, I thought he did not recover from getting taken out in game 6 of the World Series, where I think he pitched the game he ever pitched, unless this last one was better. 8 innings pitched, 1 hit. But I thought he was so dominant that day, and I think it took him time to recover the next year or two. He was not Blake Snell.
No.
But good enough to get the money, which he deserves. Won another Cy Young, but I'll never forget when Roberts went to take him out, the manager does not come out to talk to you. And they had a close-up of him like it was Dikembe Mutombo or something. He's waving, no, don't take me out. And then 30 seconds later, Roberts walked back. And, you know, he got out of the inning and he pitched into the next inning. He got the win that he wanted because pitchers still want wins. Managers will take you out with 2 outs in the fourth inning all the time nowadays. Was never true 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Just was not true, Rick. So, yeah, it's going to be tough with their pitching. And, again, their bullpen has been strengthened by sending starters out to the bullpen. And Yamamoto looks like he can go 7, 8, 9 innings, you know, every game, unless they somehow bang him down. I did want to say a little bit, though, about the bottom of the order. Look, Springer was great. He's still a 2017 Astro to me. You know I'm biased, Rick. Springer was great.
By the way, I love Springer. I have the Astros rainbow jersey of Springer. I drafted him in my keeper league, and I had him for 10 years on a $1 contract. I drafted him when he was still at UConn, for that matter.
You had him in 2017?
He actually expired before. Well, actually, no, I did have him then. I did have it. Yeah, because when would I have picked? He would have been at UConn in like 2012, 2013. So, yeah, no, I had him through that whole run with Houston there. I love George Springer just because he's one of my greatest success stories in fantasy. That's a selfish thing on my part.
Okay. Now, Vlad Guerrero was the MVP, which he probably should have gotten. They could have given it to Springer for that home run. But, you know, Vlad in those seven games, 385, you know, three homers, three RBIs, 1.330 OPS. I mean, he's got the numbers. But what I wanted to point out, and I think the thing that might make a difference, even though, of course, I think the Dodgers are going to win, is if you looked at the numbers, and this is MLB Network, I give them credit for this. They put up a chart of the 5-9 hitters for Toronto in this seven-game series. And in they have games 1 and 2, where they were horrible, and then games 3-7, for example. Batting, 5-9 in games 1 and 2, 3-33 for an .091 batting average. 3-7, 32-96, 333. Extra base hits, games 1 and 2, 0. Games 3-7, 12. RBIs, games 1 and 2, 1. Games 3-7, the 5-9 hitters, 20 RBIs. This doesn't happen. So right. The OPS, of course, 258 for 1-2, 952. That's major league stuff for 5-9. If these guys can do that,
yeah.
You know, you had a guy like Ernie Clement who looked like he was a 500 hitter. I mean, it was unbelievable. But Jimenez hit a home run. You got this Dalton Varsho who got some big hits. You don't even really know these guys unless you watch the Blue Jays. But if their stars can do at the top what they can do,
right,
and these guys can take it to some level, again, the pitching they're facing, especially the first two games to me, is going to be brutal for the Blue Jays. I think to face those Dodger pitchers, I think they're just too deep at starting pitching. And again, they have enough in the back end of the bullpen who only gave up 2 runs. And like, I think they pitched only 9 or 10 innings against the Brewers, but only gave up 2 runs. You'll take that every day of the week with what was a horrific bullpen during the regular season.
Yeah, very much so. And by the way, to what you said a couple minutes ago about Blake Snell, I had noticed this before when I was doing my prep, that the 2021 season, a 4.20 ERA, his worst year since ultimately his breakthrough year was 2018 when he had a 1.89 ERA. The year before that, he did a 4.04 ERA and only his second year in MLB. 4.20 was a real outlier. Now, having said that, still, because he's Blake Snell, 170 strikeouts in 128 innings. So he was still missing a lot of bats. But when he was making mistakes, he was really making mistakes that year. And so, yeah, he's back to being the best version of himself. He really has been for some time now. And that is what is going to make it so very difficult for Toronto. And that, again, you look at this, and again, do they have the kind of players that can sustain big innings? Absolutely so. Vladimir Guerrero has had a really incredible postseason. But again, just looking at what it's going to take here for them to be able to get the job done, the way that the Dodgers can come at this. I mean, you were talking about this with Yamamoto and his ability to go deep into games. And I guess Blake Snell is probably a good example of what I'm talking about here, is that, like, he's in a circumstance now where with the Dodgers and with the depth of their starting pitching, I mean, you don't like it. I don't like it. A lot of us don't like it as far as the way that analytics are affecting the game, as far as like, well, the third time through the lineup. But you know why they go by that? Because the numbers bear it out, Steve. You don't like it. I dislike it probably a little less than you, but I'm not too fond of it either. But the numbers bear it out. But the Dodgers starting pitching is almost analytics proof. It's all like, roll them out there a third time. What are they going to do? Get a hit off of Yamamoto? Have you seen the way he's dealing tonight? You know, so it's like, this is what I said before. Like, there are teams that are just like in sports that are immune to the laws of gravity. And like I said, this is, and I don't say this in a complimentary sense because I don't think it's very good for the game. And I will say, by the way, I had seen there, I mean, it might have been an art. This feels like an ESPN type article, but I'd seen an article going into this of like Dodgers Brewers could determine whether or not there's a lockout after the 2026 season. Because if the Brewers can't stop the Dodgers, they're just going to blow through, win another World Series. The other 29 teams in baseball are going to say shut it down after the 2026 season. So based on what we saw, you can book that shutdown at the end of the 2026 season. But it's, it's one of these things where, again, I said before, this is giving 2017, 2018 Warriors. You get that vibe from the Dodgers. The deck has been stacked. The laws of gravity don't apply. That's what I'm seeing when I see the Dodgers. And I didn't say that in a complimentary sense because, again, not good for baseball. Albeit, I was honest at the time, in the years of like Warriors, Cavs, like people would be like, it's not good for the NBA. I'm like, it's not good for the NBA. But the fact there's 28 irrelevant teams. My team is one of the two relevant teams, so I'm going to enjoy something that's not good for basketball. That's how the Dodger fans feel right now. The intellectually honest ones know that this isn't good for the game, but I just feel, we'll see how it plays out, but I just feel like the deck is stacked, and I don't feel like there's a whole lot of drama going into this series, a whole lot of holding our breath about the outcome. I really don't feel that way, and I generally do to almost – you know me. I'm not generally pounding the drum going into a. I do these previews in all four major sports. Very rarely am I like, this thing's over before it starts. But I am saying that now.
Well, it's hard to argue with you. I mean, you got that 0-4 stat, which is fascinating. But
yeah, we'll see.
I think the Dodgers are now coming to where they wanted to be and where they thought they'd be all season. And frankly, until the playoffs, to me, they hadn't gotten there. They still hadn't gotten there.
Right.
It was. I'm not going to say bold, but to pick them before the season and before the playoffs, which is what I did, and I think which is what you did, to do that took some courage. This is not the 1-9 shot in a horse race or something who can't lose unless some miracle happens. I think this is all Dodgers, and I think it might be, I don't usually pick games, but I think it might be 5 games. I think they might get one out of the first 2 just out of rustiness or nothing else. But I just don't see, and look, I could be wrong. Could Toronto win? Of course they could win. I don't know. I'm not a gambler guy in terms of these things, but I can't imagine what they are, what Toronto is plus whatever to win the World Series, because it has to be a gigantic number. But I give them credit, but I'll give you one analogy. So I wasn't around the early 50s, the shot heard around the world, Bobby Thompson, that was done in New York. I wasn't born yet, but eventually many years later, I would ask my father, I said, why is the Bobby Thompson shot heard around the world? The shot heard around the world because the Yankees had won in 49 and 50. They were going to win in 52 and 53. And my father said to me, well, to tell you the truth, the people in New York who were Yankee fans at the time, like my old man said, they were just playing to lose to the Yankees.
Yeah.
What I said during this season, during this series between Toronto, I would have been fine if Toronto did not make it to the World Series, because Seattle has never been there. And, Yankees, the year they won 116 games, Seattle, the Yankees knocked them out in like a best of 5, which is a whole other story for another time. But, I was looking at it like we're saying last week, we're saying, well, these guys are playing to lose to the Dodgers. We'll see if that's true, because nobody's done it since, as you said, the Yankees, 98, 99, and 2000. But this is almost a fait accompli. I hate to say that. I love to bet the underdogs. I like the underdogs, but I just don't see the underdogs. The Dodgers, to me, were a little bit of an underdog, Rick, before the playoffs started, but they're not an underdog anymore.
I didn't really consider them to be an underdog that much, although, again, I picked Seattle over Milwaukee before the playoffs started. I stuck to that when it was the league championship series. But this is a thing where, again, rarely do I mean, I'm thinking back the last couple of years. I mean, probably the most lopsided final I think I've seen in any of the major sports the last couple of years was probably 2023 Denver and Miami. And I did pick Miami to win a game in that series. I didn't, and they ended up, I think that's what it ended up being. It was a classic gentleman's sweep. I almost never get to this point and pick. So I don't remember in 2017 and 2018. Like, I remember, like, I did pick correctly. I picked the Warriors both times. I think I picked the Warriors in 5, I think, the first time. And I might have picked in 4 the second time. I don't know. Point is, I so rarely do it, but Dodgers in 4. I'm saying that it's sweep. We'll see. And I'll be rooting to be wrong on this one. Not as hard as if it were Seattle playing there, because I really would have liked to have seen that. And I feel like Toronto was the spoiler in a great story here. for Seattle. Well, may I say also, too, the pitching matchups, neither of the American League managers covered themselves in a lot of glory with a lot of the pitching switches that they did. So that doesn't give a whole lot of credence going into the World Series here, the Toronto, that Schneider's going to push all the right buttons.
Well, I will say, and this will be more to you picking Seattle to go win Game 7 and go to the World Series, but a couple of things happened in those last couple of innings, especially the ninth inning, when Julio Rodriguez, who is an excellent player, had hit a home run in this game, kind of a free swinger, but he gets up and there's two. Raleigh is on deck. Raleigh had already hit a home run in that game as well. He hit five in the playoffs. I'll save maybe for another time that, you know, they come up and they say he's got 65 homers for the year now because he has five in the playoffs, and he's got more than all the 60 home run hitters in the American League. Well, Ruth only played seven games. He hit 60. He only played 154-game season. He could only play in seven games. So what, is he going to hit five or six home runs in seven games? He hit three in the games a couple of times. And then, of course, Maris, 61. Well, right. You know, he played in one series. I think they swept that year also. And then Aaron Judge, who is notoriously not so good in the playoffs, was better this year, but wasn't, to me, Aaron Judge. I think he had one big home run. I don't want to take away from him. He's a great player. But Julio Rodriguez is up, and they're down one. And if he gets on base, then Raleigh's going to get up. Now, who would you rather have in the history of the world? Otani, maybe? You know,
right.
Babe Ruth, maybe? But on that particular at bat, and this is where I don't like, you know, they talk about the refs a lot, you know, who comes to see the refs in football or hockey. But in this at bat, Rodriguez, there was a 3-2 pitch. You probably saw the final pitch. Everybody did. It was 5 inches outside, and Rodriguez just flayed at it. Of those six pitches, I thought four of them were balls, maybe five. And the fact that the umpire ended that game was sad to me. Now, he didn't end the game. The guy swung. That was a pitch that was takeable. You know, I heard some expert on MLB say, oh, he was so excited he had to swing. He knew he was going to swing. This guy knew he was going to swing before the pitch. Give me a break.
Right.
He threw it right at his head. He wasn't swinging. But even the inning before, in the eighth inning, you might have seen this one. Suarez, a very good hitter. They called him out on a 3-2 pitch that was high and inside.
Yeah.
And the only reason I bring that up, Rick, is because if that was ball four, absent the double play in a certain spot, then Raleigh was guaranteed to get up.
That's right.
It didn't matter what Julio Rodriguez did. Now, is he going to get up and hit a home run? The odds are long, but if you had one guy on either of these teams, I think I would have wanted it to be Raleigh because he's a switch hitter.
Yeah. And instead, the headlines this morning read, dumper denied. So he never made it to the plate.
Boy, it would have been nice. That would have been nice if that happened.
I mean, it would have been.
Yeah.
It would have been. I don't think the outcome would have been any different than what I'm picking with a sweep here. But it would have been more fun to watch. I think the Mariners are a very fun story. And, again, we'll see what happens with Toronto. And, again, if Springer's able to hold up, because you did notice a couple times in the previous at-bats last night, swinging but then going to like one knee on home plate. So, I mean, he is not 100% after getting hit directly on the kneecap. So, I mean, in a way, you look at it, and again, I've already, you know, established my credentials as a George Springer mark, but something of a Kirk Gibson moment, perhaps, him doing that under the circumstances. I mean, you know, beat the crap. The other moment that came to mind was in terms of a critical home run that really swung the game, Howie Kendrick in 2019, because that was another game where I was pretty much convinced, largely because I wanted to be convinced, that the game was over, and turned out not to be on one swing of the bat. This time it was George Springer, perhaps getting a little bit of cosmic revenge for what happened 6 years ago when Howie Kendrick hit that home run at the then Minute Maid Park, whatever the heck it was at the time, who knows. But as far as how this plays out, yeah, this will be fun to see. And again, hoping that it will be a longer series than what I think it's going to be. And at some point in the near future, the next 2 to 3 weeks, it'll be good to catch up with you again, hopefully, Steve, and review the World Series and the 2025 season as a whole. Can't thank you enough for being here with us, as always, my man.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Rick.
Thank you so much. The pleasure's all mine, Steve. The great Steve Callis, everybody, from the Callis Remarks podcast. Thank you for being here, Steve, and thank you all for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1875.